Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out tonight. And I hope you will consider getting a copy of US One Worksheets. It's a very interesting journal, and possibly a book by one of these poets, you know, maybe two. I bet this has happened to you. Getting her mail. I browse through her catalogs, though they aren't L.L. Bean or flyers announcing when the Assistance League is cutting prices, but evocations of glitter disco thongs, secret garden wardrobe bathrobes, garments coated, so soft, heavenly soft, ultimate softness. Languid women float on three cloud blankets and 500 thread count sheets. There's a lot of stretchy gauze. Sahara pants are like springtime. The handmade cashmere shawls, exquisite, tall-stemmed women hold wine coolers or flower pots. They twirl their turquoise skirts. There are frownies to relax the forehead muscles. Everything is $90. I am almost seduced by the longevity tunic. Why can't we live forever? The aqua nightgown made from the fiber of real freshwater pearls. Okay. The next poem is almost a request. Michael Worster likes this poem, so I thought I'd read it. And three of these five poems I'm reading have been in US One worksheets. This one is in the 40th anniversary edition. The Experimental Plane. In Alamogordo, I trudged through sandstorms with a bloody nose, but hid behind the kitchen door when test pilot Roger Croman showed up drunk. My dad would coax and reassure him that the experimental plane was solid, that he and it wouldn't fall in flames to earth. My dad's gone, and I think about gravity a lot, how scientists can and can't explain what it really is. Once my dad took me on a Ferris wheel, and together we looked down at my mother, a tiny figure on the ground, screaming. Dad said something like, "She gets dizzy drinking from a tall glass." Once we all remember July 20th, 1969, we studied the geometry of space. Gravitational force, gravity proportional to mass of object one to mass of object two divided by the distance between the objects, the distance between the objects. Don't ask me to explain it. I do have a beer mug kind of trophy on my desk. Manned Lunar Landing, Hal Bauer, A3, Mission Control. What if the first particles hadn't clumped together a lifeless universe? My dad would say in his best Walter Cronkite, "Funny you should ask." But what if there'd been no gravity? I pretend my mother is not dead, but is bartering at a West LA farmer's market, her battered shopping cart bulging with purple figs, rock-hard guavas, juicy ripe persimmons. Perhaps she'll trade them for frozen eggs or shiny eggplant or chocolate she'll store in the freezer, because out of sight is out of mind. My mother is buried at Holy Cross with the Catholic movie stars. She never met anyone famous unless you count Colonel John Stapp, the rocket sled man. Mother liked my poems so long as I said nothing bad about NASA or Charles Lindbergh or my father. But I can't forget the double martinis my father needed to have lunch with me at Nixon's favorite Mexican restaurant, El Adobe. Dad's wife would share how sorry she felt for the little people. She was related to an early California governor. Maybe that gave her airs. She'd been his secretary. She loved him and would bring him, without question, the vodka orange juice from the stainless Frigidaire. I drive home repeating a kind of mantra, you were not your parents, you were not. Lucky, lucky. The fire in 92 spared all the family photos. That winter, I wiped away every smudge to see my parents smiling and foolish and young again. This poem is going to appear in an anthology published by Tebbutt Bach later this year, honoring David St. John. And it was part of all, for all the folks who study with David St. John at one point or another in California. And this is called Fig Season. Last August in my mother's big L.A. backyard was fig season. She had 14 trees, which she grew impossibly from scratch, cutting off a branch, then just sticking it into the dusty soil. And hey presto, another fig tree. Each day there'd be a dozen figs to pick and share with neighbors, friends and neighbors, or farmers, market buddies, even strangers. She was a share-the-wealth gal. Not all her cousins were, but she was. So I'm happy to see this sturdy fig in Darlene and Derwin's garden, along with the arborvita, the Arcosanti bells, the turquoise oriental rug made from recycled milk cartons. I start telling them about my Sicilian family who came through New Orleans to Waco, then L.A., escaping what? Poverty, oppression, the black hand. I don't know the real story, but they all grew figs. And when I'd go back to visit, even when it wasn't easy, dodging xenophobes and crazy birchers, I remember thinking, I can't help loving fig season, how their succulent green oozes a sticky milk the moment that you pluck them, the center's rich with seed and fruit, the slightly furry skin. Of course you eat the skin. If you don't eat the skin, you're not a real Sicilian. Okay. This is a new poem for my friend Nancy Carl Maddox, who is my student in the late 70s and near D.C. And so it's a poem about friendship. Telling my friend Nancy about the poet, Amy Clampett. Forgive me, she happened to look and sound rather like you, especially the youthful Amy with beret and pearls in London, her voice fervent and eager, rising in an upcurl half an octave when startled or surprised. A misfit child in Iowa lying on the rug reading. A Quaker, impatient with authority. You'd have loved her Greenwich Village where she met her partner Harold, mixing sangria for the Democrats, wrote angry letters to Kissinger, spent two nights in jail. But even you will need a dictionary for her poems, a notepad to diagram the syntax. Nothing escaped her microscopic focus, not beach glass or owls, migraines or kudzu. Remember when we camped in Acadia? You could name every leafy fig the smallest sea urchin. Even now, Nancy, I know you'd drop everything to listen to a hermit thrush. Thank you so much. And our next reader is the poet and wit, Anne Curran.